Those who can do, those who cannot do it on the internet. FancyPantsGangsters.com. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Flyover Ska Show. I'm your host, Courtney Close. This episode, like all episodes, is brought to you by the Fancy Pants Gangsters Podcast Network at FancyPantsGangsters.com and by MN Ska, Minnesota's ska community at MNSka.com. We're back, baby! It's been several months, but finally the show is back. So to those longtime listeners, I really appreciate your patience. For those who are new to the show, this is a podcast I started a while back when I realized that there was a growing number of people in the Midwest here that are fans of ska music and its derivatives. And some of those people have been lifelong rude boys, and some are discovering the music for the first time. The Flyover Ska Show is kind of designed to give those fans a diverse look at ska and reggae music in the U.S., through a series of interviews between me and artists, musicians, bloggers, DJs, as they paint a picture of American ska music for those of us who live right here in flyover country. We kicked off this latest season with a big event I hosted earlier this month at the Triple Rock Social Club in Minneapolis. The concert featured local MN ska bands Secondhand Ska Kings, Rocksteady Breakfast, and the Drop Steppers. Drinks were had, prizes were given away, and much dancing was, well, danced. Headlining the night, though, was a Montreal reggae group called The Beatdown. After the show, the band drove to my house and wound down with a couple of beers and shared some insight into the world of a touring band from a foreign land.
All right, so I am sitting here in my living room with the band The Beatdown from Montreal, Canada. This is the most exotic band I've had in my living room. So kudos to you guys. You guys are the first international reggae stars to be sitting in my living room.
Nice.
So you guys are on tour right now. You guys are, this is your first American tour.
Actually, not.
It's not?
Third one, I'd say.
Third one. But it's your first one in Minnesota, though.
Yeah, right? First show in Minnesota. Yeah.
Okay. And so tell me, how's the tour been going so far?
It's been great. It's the fourth day.
Yeah.
We had some good shows. Some Milwaukee sucked.
I got to say
that seems to be the consensus around all the camps, all the bands.
Yeah. About it. I mean, We had a good night last night. Last night was in Milwaukee. The bar people were nice to us. Mm-hmm. Food was good. Bands were great. So I don't want to say bad things about Milwaukee.
No.
But
as long as you were treated well, that's good.
That's it.
But so far so good. And how many days are you guys on this tour?
It's 25 days. So we've gone from November 3rd to November 26th.
Yeah. Okay.
Last show was in Montreal.
Okay. So you guys are ending up back in the homeland. Where does this tour take you guys?
Well, all across the Midwest and up north Canada to the west, so BC, mm-hmm. which is like Vancouver, Victoria, Seattle, then back home. So all across Canada and a little bit of the Midwest.
Okay. That's cool. And you guys just played a show tonight in Minneapolis, and I can't thank you guys enough for coming. It was an amazing time. We really enjoy this type of music. You guys play this. I was telling Alex earlier, it's skinhead reggae music played the right way. You know what I mean? Like, it's brilliant. You guys were really, really good. I suppose before we go any further, I should probably do some introductions. So we got Alex, You're the
guitar
lead singer, guitar.
Sure.
And it's going on down the line here.
Yeah, I'm Pascal, playing the bass.
I'm Mike, playing the drums.
And I'm Johnny, playing the guitar.
Very good. Johnny.
That's my name in the U.S., remember?
Giovanni.
Giovanni.
He's Giovanni Saboia.
No, you guys were amazing tonight. And and like our crowd maybe wasn't as great or wasn't as big, but
that was a great crowd.
Enthusiastic.
That was a great crowd, man.
Yeah.
That was lovely.
Yeah.
Dancing people.
Yeah. Like I have a feeling, and this is my theory, is that we're just really starving for this sort of music to come through, and so we're really grateful when bands do come through. So it's really nice to have a band that knows what they're doing. You know? Like you guys clearly know, you guys have a vision, you guys know what you guys are up to, and that's really cool. Pascal, I gotta say, I really dug your bass lines. Like, it looked like you were just dancing around on stage, but like aside from the dancing, what you were doing is you were honing in on like these really cool like bass lines, and it looked very effortless. That's the thing. You guys make it look really easy.
Well, the truth is, he just dances around. There's actually those are pre-recorded bass tracks.
Yeah,
Doesn't Alex dance too?
Lots of dancing.
He's a swing dancer.
Is that so?
My girlfriend is into swing dancing. These guys make fun of me.
Chapeau, les boys.
So you guys have a debut CD out. Came out like last year. And you guys are still supporting that. Can you tell me a little bit about that release? Like what was that like? What was it like recording it and putting it out?
Yeah, and there's 12 songs on it, I think.
Yeah, 12.
Yeah, and we recorded it at my studio in Montreal with absolutely no pressure. It was, we started writing tunes, and since we had access to the studio, we just wrote a tune and then went to the studio to record it.
Mm-hmm.
And even sometimes there was no lyrics to it, there was no guitar lines or anything. So with no pressure, we just started recording the recording process, and song after song, I guess we had a record done at some point.
Yeah, a lot of songs that we never played before, like live.
Mm-hmm.
So some of them, we played a couple of times shows and stuff, but some of them, it was just in the studio, so it was a bit scary at first. You just do these things, you're not sure.
Right,
but
what's it like going into the studio without? It is no pressure, but a lot of times you hear about people that they either create the album totally in the studio, or they work out every single song before do the reps on the songs and make sure that they're down tight, and then when they go in the studio, it's such an efficient process. So it's this is kind of somewhere in between that. What was it like to do it that way? I mean, Alex, you keep saying it's no pressure, but what is that? I mean, you guys have recorded music, I assume, before.
Mm-hmm.
What is it like compared to your past experiences?
Well, it was just a different approach, I'd say. Usually in my experience, when you play shows with a band, tour with a band, you write one tune and just insert it into your live show, and then from there, you have a new album written.
Mm-hmm.
But since we were just starting out, we just went in the studio and tried different things, and without really playing them live. So it was just a different approach, which is cool. I mean, it's cool to not do things always the same way,
Mm-hmm.
So kind of like the recording process. I think this time we're gonna do things differently. Just to keep it fresh, I guess.
Sure, yeah. So, so this album was, the self-titled album?
Yep.
Album?
Yep.
The Beatdown? What do you guys got cooking up for the future here? What's coming down the pipe here for your next release?
You mean tour wise or song wise?
Either or. Yeah.
I don't know. We got maybe 15 songs written.
Yeah.
For the new record, maybe half of them we played them live. One of them we played
first time
for
tonight.
The first time tonight. Yeah,
that was amazing. That was a good song. Like you guys, seriously, like I told you guys off air, it's like this community I feel is craving for this sort of music. So they're very receptive to that new song. And the other thing is like when they like a band, it doesn't matter if it's brand new or if it's, you know, it's like you guys are still working on it or whatever. It's like they're going to be very receptive to that. So
that's what made the show this good. You know, like people were just into it.
Yeah,
just
a couple of kids in front, like singing all the lyrics.
Yeah, it's good when you go to a city and like people expect you. You know what I mean? Like it was just great. People sticked around and. Was good. Sometimes you play in front of like larger audience and they just don't care about the music. Tonight was good.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So it's a little bit of quality over quantity is what we like to say. Yeah. So how did you guys come together as a band? Like how did this all begin? What I do on this podcast I like to do is have the musicians kind of like take us through your kind of your journey as how you came to be to this point. So how did you guys come about as a band?
Well, I started with Mike G. Mike G wanted to start a reggae band, so he called me up. But no, actually, it's... wrong answer. With the one night band stopping playing shows, we just, Pascal and I wanted to keep going as a band, so we started this new project.
And they needed a driver, so
we called Joe. I have
my driver license, so they called me.
We need
everyone. Every band needs a good wheel man. I'm telling you,
that's
yeah.
Joe Man. Wheel man. It's a good name for it.
Yeah,
it's a good song title.
Yeah,
wheel man. Instrumental.
Wheel man.
How the band started?
Yeah. So One Night Band went on hiatus and from there Pascal and I started writing new tunes, and from there we started the beatdown with Joe and our drummer Fids, and
what made you decide to pursue I guess this avenue of music? The beatdown is decidedly different than One Night Band's style of music. From what I remember from One Night Band, it was a lot of two-tone music, a lot of cool, fun, like horn-driven music. This is just the four of you guys, no horns. It's more of like that early reggae sound. So, what drove you towards that sound?
Well, to me, it's more of a evolution, like where One Night Band was going. Is what the beatdown became. Because when we wrote the second album, One Night Band's second
it's
album.
Pretty much four musicians.
We're four musicians. One drum, one guitar, one organ, and one bass. And we did a lot of touring as a four piece. And for most of the tours, since the first album had horns, we had a horn player, sax player touring with us. Just. Mm-hmm. So we can play the old tunes.
Sure.
But that's kind of where we were going to, like a four-piece band.
What would cause you to move in that direction?
Money.
Sorry.
No, but I mean, like, having, like, a traveling with an eight-piece band is just impossible.
Trouble.
Yeah.
Fun sometimes, but trouble.
And you know, you put time into, I don't know, like you're 8-piece band, takes time to be a tight unit, and then someone leaves, and then you got to build it again with someone else. 8 people is just too many people, if you ask personally, if you ask me.
Yeah.
So having a 4-piece band makes it tighter.
I think that's a common problem with a lot of ska bands. I mean, like, I mean, especially like there's tons of American ska bands. We have like there's so many people in the band. It makes it hard to sustain. You know, I mean, if you want to do any sort of success, you know, currently. So, I think. I mean, the sound that you guys did back in One Night Band, it's like, this is totally, I mean, this is different. This is a different sound. This is different music. Is it just numbers or is it a mentality, you know?
No, I mean, it's not just like, numbers, like you said, but it's also like, it was kind of nice to go and do this like more raw kind of music a bit, like, you know, like old rock and roll, like it's a kind of simple. So we do the same thing with reggae, and it's just, I mean, it's cool to play, you know, on the stage and there's like nine people. It's nice, but it's harder when you're less people on the stage, you know, play, and it's like everything is like has this little space here and there, and you have to do this little thing. So it's kind of interesting.
Yeah,
like we like to do that too. Like it's not just it's trouble touring with 8 people, but it's not just that. Like it's
right.
The music part is important too.
Mm-hmm. I think having like the 2 guitars bring the rock element or the punk element or whatever you want to call it, but the raw element a little more than when you have keyboard and 3 horns and a girl singing and a guy singing. You know, so. And that's what we try to do, like bring a reggae with more edge.
Sure.
That's kind of what we try to do.
You guys definitely bring that sound across. I'm interested in you guys. Have you always been fans of this style of music, or like what drew you guys to the Beatdown?
Well, actually, I never played or barely listened to reggae before playing with these guys.
Mm-hmm.
I used to play rock music and with other bands, and then Alex called me, "Do you want to try to play reggae?" I said, "Sure. Do you want me? Are you sure you want me to play reggae?"
And then I brought up the driver license.
So I gave it a shot, and it works out. So
yeah, it definitely does.
So that's how it starts. But Mike,
How about you, Mike?
Yeah, I've been playing this music for quite a long time. Not necessarily with the Beatles. 45 years. No.
Swapoli,
probably about 12 years or 13 years. It started with a Canadian ska band, General Rudy.
Oh.
Yeah, I was in General Rudy, and then I joined the Kingpins and did a touring with Kingpins. We actually played here before. Oh. I played here in Minneapolis at the Triple Rock about 6 years ago.
Oh, really?
At the Kingpins passing through. Yeah.
Huh.
And then a bunch of other bands, I met these guys through some other bands, Blood and Fire stuff, and somewhat local Montreal stuff.
Cool.
We did a lot of touring there, and kind of met them. I'm doing this tour, and it's a lot of fun.
This is a pretty general question, but I mean, like the music that we pull, like that we're into here, like is kind of a niche. I mean, it's a subculture. I mean, not everybody knows what it is, you know what I mean?
You know, it kind of answers your question before, what you were saying, how was the tour? And it was like, tonight was a good example of what can happen on a ska tour, because sometimes you end up in places that don't, or ska, reggae, whatever the case may be, and people don't know what you are. You might be in some weird bar, and there may be a lot of people, but it's not their thing. Tonight... Mm-hmm. Great crowd, because they were expecting that music, and they know. I've been in places before where people are like, they're watching you, they're kind of looking at you like this.
Yeah.
They're like, this isn't fucking bluegrass, the fuck is this, you know? So when you get people that are in it and they come to do it, it's a beautiful thing. You create this bubble and you're dancing and it's a phenomenal thing.
No,
but it's definitely a bit of a new.
Who's dancing?
What do you say?
Pascal's dancing.
Yeah. Pascal's dancing.
Yeah. 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 On stage only. Stage only, though.
Yeah.
No, you strike a good point. I mean, like, it happens. I mean, you don't know where the fans are. I mean, you just don't know where people like ska and reggae music. And it's not just a fashion, like, well, I kind of, you know, like, I'm in this scene. It's more of a, like, I mean, here in Minneapolis, I felt like the people that were there for, because they love the music. We played a show in Milwaukee, not the reggae Milwaukee again.
Yes, but we are.
Okay.
No, let's bring down Milwaukee.
No, we played a show there in May, and it was a good show, but there were some people there, and they were dressed to the part. They dressed like they were there for a ska show. And they didn't move. You know, they just stood there. And
that's
looking at you,
very interesting.
Which is it's weird. It's weird to experience. So it's like, you know who your true friends are, you know, and you know who or your true fans are, and you know who aren't, you know. And it's so I guess like I said, some people are into it, some people aren't. You guys are clearly are into it. So what drew you to ska and reggae music to begin with? Like what? How did it all start for you guys?
Well, personally, it started when I was 15 years old, and I just discovered Bob Marley, and from there, discovered Toots and the Maytals, mm-hmm. Catalytes, and on and on. And
so you went the like more of the like Jamaican route to the music.
Yeah, and then I had obviously I listened to like Real Big Fish, Less Than Jake, and all mm-hmm. all that stuff. But yeah, I mean, I was playing music. I was playing in rock bands and punk bands and stuff. And obviously, when you're playing punk bands, the reggae ska element is there
mm-hmm.
because you got Rancid, you got tons of bands that mix the two of them two genres together.
Mm-hmm.
So I just ended up playing reggae and ska, and I dig a little more and went into the traditional sound.
Sure,
which. I've been playing for 10 years now.
Sure, yeah. How about you, Pascal?
I mean, for me, it's different. It's totally different. It was more... I'm a guitar player, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to... And Alex, I was a fan of One Night Band. And at one point, I was living in... You know, from Montreal, I was living in Toronto. Moved there for 2 years and these guys were coming, you know, One Night Band would play in Toronto and come, you know, crash at my place and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I get this call one day, and Alex is like, "Oh yeah, man, you wanna play bass in One Night Band? We're gonna go on tour in Europe and stuff." And I'm like, "Okay, I'll play, you know, play a bit of bass around, you know, recordings and stuff, but I'm a rock and roll guitar player, you know."
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, "Okay, I could try that." So I move. Back in Montreal, one of my friends came and, like, you know, with a car, put like all my stuff in a car and moved back to Montreal and started to play with One Night Band and started to play reggae. And, you know, these guys told me, like, the Larry was a keyboard player and it was really good, you know, told me, like, what to do and, you know, you should do this, blah, blah, blah. I got into it. I mean, I don't know. It's like that was really a new thing for me. And just started to play so many shows that, like, I play more shows, you know, playing bass and guitar now. Mm-hmm. So that was pretty much. And I got into the, you know, the music. Like, I liked reggae before, but it was really new to play reggae for me. Like, I never played, like, you know, reggae on guitar or whatever.
Right.
So I started to play bass. So pretty much, you know, since I play bass, it's reggae.
Yeah.
Reggae ska, so I'm like. You know, getting around a bit, I guess. But it's fun. It's fun to play. Like, it's good times.
Yeah, no, definitely.
So I got into it. So, yeah.
Cool. How about you, Mike? You said you've been playing this music for a long time.
Played for a long time, but I mean...
What drew you to it?
Well, I don't know. It kind of started with Bob Marley too. I was listening to a lot of rock and metal as a kid, and then you grow up, and that was like amazing music for me. And then reggae was always there, and Bob Marley was kind of the starting point, and it opened the door. And then you realize that, okay, that's really not it. That was like an end, you know, a point there. And then you start realizing that there's Jackie Me Too's and Lynn Tate's and Ernest Ranglin's and all those great guys. And then the Scatolites. And then it opens this whole thing. And then you start knowing about players and, oh, what happened. And, oh, ska became rocksteady and rocksteady became reggae. And it's kind of cool. And it was a beautiful sounding music. And that's kind of how it... But, I mean... Really, how I got into playing it is kind of by accident.
Yeah.
It wasn't like I said, I'm going to play in a ska reggae band. It just kind of happened. I had a friend who had a band, and they're like, oh, it's a ska band, and you should try out. And I tried out, and it was kind of fun. We played in the basement. There was horn lines. It was very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And it was great. I liked it.
I think it's interesting because I feel like, I mean, the American experience, or like at least the Midwestern experience, I feel like, because we weren't at the forefront of any sort of like ska movements or anything, we just got whatever came our way. I feel like we all came from, it sounded like you guys came from it from starting from like Jamaica. And we're in the Midwest, a lot of people were like, oh, like, we've heard of Real Big Fish and the Mighty Mighty Bosstones. Like, these are cool bands. And then, like, we kind of traced it all the way back.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas you didn't have to trace it too far back because you were like, well, like, we're into this Bob Marley stuff. Like, when it's, I remember being a teenager going, like, forget Bob Marley, we got the Mighty Mighty Bosstones, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, so I think it's interesting, like, not, I mean, geographically, not very far away is Montreal from, like, the Midwest, but just coming at it from a different angle.
Montreal is, I don't know, it's a pretty good scene, or whatever you want to say, for ska.
It's always been good.
Yeah, it's always been good throughout the years, and there's the Montreal Ska Festival goes on now, and there's all kinds of good stuff, and there's always, there's setbacks, and there's times when it's not as popular, or... I don't know. Lately, it's pretty. It's great.
Days, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Montreal is, I think, is one of the favorite stop for a lot of ska bands, just because, I mean, bands are able. I mean, Streetlight Manifesto can fill out the 3,000 people venue, and they don't do that everywhere.
Right.
And Plant Smashers are doing like 1,000 people capacity venues, and like. Small bands can fill up like 300 people capacity venue. So, I mean, there's really a lot of people that are into that kind of music. And it's been like that since, I'd say, like late 90s.
Yeah, even before.
Late 80s,
like Me Mom.
That's
Me
it,
Mom
Me Mom
and Morgan
Toller.
Kind of. And then Kingpins and then Planet Smashers and then a whole bunch of...
That's it.
I mean, there's some we're forgetting.
It's been going on for like 20, 25 years.
Absolutely.
Why do you think that is? Like, why do you think that Montreal seems to be kind of a hot spot for ska music in general?
I honestly wasn't there at the time.
But you're there now. I mean, like...
No, I know. But, you know, like...
We're back in the day. I remember back in 78.
No, but, like, what makes it so special? I mean, like, there are other places. There are other big cities
but,
and stuff.
You know, like, these things change. Like, 5-6 years ago, Montreal was not as good as it is now.
Exactly.
And Toronto was the place to... Well, in my experience, Toronto was the place to go. That's where there was... good bands, good crowds, good shows, everything.
Mm-hmm.
And in Montreal, I mean, there was one night band, General Rudy, had just called it quit, and there was the Plant Smashers, but Kingpins were done.
Yep.
So there was not a real scene going on.
Mm-hmm.
Like, honestly, like, one night band was the only band for, like, maybe a year or two, which kind of sucks.
Right.
And
yeah,
now it's... It's great. There's like 10, 12 bands going on.
And coming from like being involved with this in the Minnesota ska scene, it's like, you need a kind of a stable of bands in order for it to sustain itself. Otherwise, if you just got one band, you don't have a whole lot a whole lot of momentum to go off of. You know?
Well, there were some nice bands tonight. Yeah. Drop
yeah.
Step Rimming?
Yeah.
Sweet sounds.
Yeah.
I mean, all the bands I played tonight, Secondhand Ska Kings and Rock City Breakfast and Into the Drop Steppers, they've all, I guess, paid their dues. I mean, they've all played a lot, and it's obvious that they've played a lot. And it's nice to be able to call upon those bands to play shows because they're really good at what they do, you know. And they're all different sounds, but they're all within the same kind of, you know, under the same umbrella of, you know, ska Jamaican music. So it's nice. I mean, as someone who promotes and books shows and puts on events like these, it's so nice to be able to call upon like these bands at a moment's notice and be like, hey, can you play this show? If there's just one band, and if they're not popular, then it's like then you're done. You know, as a scene, you're seen as toast.
Yeah, it's true. And you need good bands to have a good scene because mm-hmm. people want to see good bands. I mean,
it sounds simple enough, but yeah, you're right. I mean, you need talent there. You need something for people to look forward to seeing.
That's it.
And definitely, the bands that played tonight were. Are bands that we definitely cherish in the scene. So, so you guys are playing in America, and this is an American ska podcast, I guess. Aside from the bands you saw tonight, and I mean, you guys have been on tours and stuff, and I assume that you guys are paying attention to kind of the current trends, what's going on. Who do you guys listen to? Who do you guys think are kind of the bands to be paying attention to in, I guess, in the ska world?
There's a lot of good bands we've toured with. I mean, gotcha. Royal City Riot, yeah. Pinstripes, Green Room Rockers.
Deal's Gone Bad. Pretty good band, actually.
Mm. There's so many. I mean, you guys in America have a lot of good bands. I mean, when you tour Canada, like, you're going to play with local bands every night, but like one show out of 10 you're going to play with a good reggae ska band.
Mm-hmm.
Here it feels like there's a good reggae ska band in almost every fairly
big
city.
It's one or two in every city pretty much.
It's true. I mean, you guys got like Slackers. Well, the New York City scene is pretty strong.
Yeah.
You got Fourth Rights. You go out west in California, you got Agrolides, Debonairs, Expanders, mm-hmm. name them. Seattle, you got Georgetown Orbits. When you go down to like Texas, you got Stingers.
Mm-hmm.
So many bands. So many great bands.
That's the thing. Like, I've been trying to kind of. I've been trying to like get a good vision of like what all the good current bands are in America, and it's tough because there are a lot, and they're all spread out, and they're all in their own little pockets. You know, you've got your New York, you've got your a little bit of Midwest, you've got a little bit of like there's a number of bands in Texas, and there's a number of bands out in California, and there's a number of bands up in the Northwest. And it's like it's hard to kind of pinpoint those bands, but like. What do you think makes those bands good? I mean, like, so back in the 90s was big with third wave and ska punk, I guess, and like 80s is more like two-tone stuff. Like, what do you think, like, would classify as the current sound? Like, if you were to be like, oh, that's the sound of, you know, 2010 and beyond, you know, like what is that to you guys?
Well, I think the Slackers and the Agrolites influenced
right.
a whole bunch of bands, us included.
Yeah.
And like to me, like when I hear a young band playing Real Big Fish kind of music, I mean, I find it a little not old, but I don't know what's the right word for it, but the
old
sounds.
Fashion. Maybe.
Not old-fashioned, but
dated.
Yeah, it's out of time. It's out of like it was a music of a time that
it sounds
is
really
not
90s
now.
To me.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, a couple of years ago, it wasn't like that. I mean, you would play like rocksteady and skinhead reggae, and you would just sound like no one else. Mm-hmm. Right now, this is the trend. Right now, this is mm-hmm. how the new bands want to sound, and which is cool.
No, I definitely see that happening. The bands, I mean, like you said, the Slackers. I mean, the band I play in right now. I mean, we have the same instrumentation, and it's not an accident. You know, like we really draw influence from that band. We just saw the Agrolites in town not too long ago. I mean, they play just such a signature sort of, you know, this dirty reggae sort of sound, and that's like, God, I'd love to sound like that too, you know. And so it's like, I definitely agree with that statement. It's like, I do think it's interesting how that music evolves, because it's like it's all the same like family. It's all the same.
That's it. People could say that this new revival, rock steady, reggae, whatever, mm-hmm. that could sound dated too.
Right.
It's, you know, the punk ska. Yeah, exactly. You know, the punk ska. Yeah, it could sound like This could sound like 70s or 60s or like. Yeah, it's all.
I had a conversation.
It's what you like. You take the elements you like and you put it into the music, and that's your little tribute to that kind of music. So
exactly,
that's all valid, really.
Yeah. I think that's right. I mean, like, I had a conversation with Bucket from Toasters when they were in town, and it was like he said the same thing. It's like they're all branches off of the same tree. You know, it's like it's all the same like family. So. Because one person plays ska punk and another person plays, you know, traditional roots reggae. It's this, you know, they're all tied together at some point. Mm-hmm. So it's like they're all valid, I guess.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I just find it fascinating the way that the music was progressed. I mean, if you, like you were, I can't remember who it was that was saying that it was like how ska became rocksteady, became mm-hmm. reggae. I mean, it's like that all happened within a number of like 4 years, yeah, 5 years. I mean, that all took place within half a decade. Mm-hmm. You know, that evolution is amazing to me, and I think that's fun to go back and listen to that and like kind of pay attention to that. And I feel like the Beatdown is a perfect example of like going back and paying attention to that sort of thing, because you guys do play. That sort of like old early reggae, but like it's raw, it's got like a little bit of it's got an edge to it, you know. Yeah. What I mean, like, and I like that, I dig that, and I think that people can relate to that and dig it now, whether that sounds dated in a half decade or not. Exactly. who knows what's gonna happen, right?
Exactly.
But I think that when you do things that do music that sound old, that doesn't sound like the taste of the day, mm-hmm. It's going to be more relevant for longer. If you make an album that sounds like the 60s, I mean, it sounds like the 60s. I mean, it's not going to be sound of the day that's going to be dated in 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it was there before.
Because it was there before. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I expressed myself clearly.
No, I think what you're saying is that the music is timeless, and timeless lasts a lot longer than something
when you can't tell when it was recorded. Mm-hmm. That's when it gets timeless.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's well put.
Thank you.
So what's the future of Beatdown? What's next for you guys?
Aberdeen tomorrow.
Aberdeen tomorrow. Aberdeen tomorrow.
Very good. New album on the way. Then more touring.
Okay.
More fun.
Good. No, I like it. Like, so more stuff for the fans to look forward to. And where can people find you guys? Maybe online, or you guys got any sites to plug?
Yeah. Well, Facebook. It's facebook.com/TheBeatdown.
Okay.
Then you got MySpace. It's myspace.com/JoinTheBeatdown.
JoinTheBeatdown. Okay.
And you got Twitter, which I don't remember what the address is.
I can't. What is this?
You can buy music off of iTunes, Interpunk, and come to our live shows. That's where we're going.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys for sitting down and taking the time to be on the show. And
thanks to you.
For this is Courtney Close for The Beatdown, and we're saying skank on.
Right.